All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
And welcome to the continuing Oscar series here on The Cinephiles, where John Rocha, me, and my co-host Steve Morris break down one Best Picture nominee with every one of these episodes. And today, we are tackling Wicked, this adaptation of the smash Broadway musical directed by John M. Chu, starring Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande, Jeff Goldblum, and Michelle Yeoh, Jonathan Bailey, Peter Dinklage, and a host of other fantastic young and up-and-coming actors, and one great SNL actor in Bowen Yang. And we're going to break this thing down and talk about it all and get into some of the Oscar nominations attached to the movie and our overall thoughts on why we think this is nominated and how it will do overall in the Oscars. So, Steve, we've had fun kicking off the series. Are the two fantastic films. What are your thoughts on Wicked and the massive pulp culture juggernaut that it has become since its release?
So first of all, I should say the first books I was ever obsessed with were the Oz books. Was the first, you know, that was sort of the beginning of loving fantasy and science fiction and all that stuff that became my things. My mom actually had hardback editions of old copies of the original Oz books, like the 18 or whatever L. Frank Baum books. I read them over and over again. The original Wizard of Oz, I watched every year, as we all did as kids. I had to sometimes hide behind the couch when the Wicked Witch showed up because she was very scary. and so I'm a big Oz person. And so I saw the musical. I did not see it with Kristen Chenoweth, but I did see it. Idina Menzel was still in it. I saw it on Broadway. Nice. And I've seen it a couple of times. So even building up to this, I had a lot of expectations for the show. And my short answer is I really loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah. And of course, as you're alluding to here, this is based on the L. Frank Baum's Wizard of Oz series here. But it is the musical is based on the book Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West by Gregory Maguire. And the musical the lyrics and the music were done by Stephen Schwartz. And that's what it became such a massive hit on Broadway. It had been years of them trying to figure out how to turn this into a movie. And finally they did. And Steve, yeah, I absolutely enjoyed the film as well. I've seen it twice now. My issues with the film are still there in the middle a little bit. I'm not the biggest fan of Jonathan Bailey in the film itself, the character and the performance. But overall, I think these songs absolutely were delivered with such emotion and such amazing direction and production design. The costumes, the look of this thing overall from the beginning to the end of the film just swept me up into its magic. And I went in with my arms folded and my eyebrow raised because I wasn't I never saw the musical. I wasn't sure this was going to be a good movie. And I wasn't really sure that Ariana Grande would be right for the role. And I thought Cynthia Erivo might be a little bit too old to play the role. And I couldn't have been more wrong on so many fronts about this movie and absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I think it's a long movie. I don't remember quite how long it is, but I was never bored. And that is not usually in a movie. And it's really that, you know, editor brain that I have that's just like, oh, couldn't we move this along a little bit quicker? it's good. That runs in my head a lot. And it really wasn't. I really was involved. And I think they handled – it's funny. I really like the show, the Broadway show. But I have mixed feelings about it. And it'll be really interesting because a lot of my mixed feelings are in the second act, which we're going to see in the second part. So we're going to see – I'm really hoping that the fact that they expanded it has allowed them to sort of smooth out and make the second act work a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But no, I was totally involved in – and like you, I think the whole cast is great. I think they did a really good job making choices that made sense to fill out the characters and sort of fill out the story.
Yeah, you talk about the length, 2 hours and 40 minutes. That's a lot to ask people of a musical here, yet people went in droves. It is currently at a $726.5 million worldwide. It didn't do so well internationally, but certainly domestically, That's where it's made the meat of its box office return, and that's incredible. So let's get into it. You just mentioned you love the whole cast. Let's talk about the cast here. Let's talk about Cynthia Erivo. Let's talk about Ariana Grande, Jonathan Bailey here, Ethan Slater, Bowen Yang, Peter Dinklage, Michelle Yeoh, Jeff Goldblum, all these wonderful actors being a part of this film. So what are your thoughts on the performances overall? What stood out to you from the work? Are there any scenes or songs or performances that you want to highlight here as we discuss their Oscar-nominated performances?
It's funny, all the controversy about, you know, is Ariana Grande capable of doing this thing? Mm. It sort of escapes me because I am the least pop culture hip person there is. So I had no sense of Ariana Grande. I'd listened to very little of her music. I had not watched her. So for me, that wasn't a big deal. I think they nailed it cast-wise. I really do. I think Cynthia Erivo is fantastic. Just really lets you into the internal life of this character, which is what's the key to the whole thing is, because she has to do a whole bunch of stuff in addition to singing a bunch of big songs, which she has an incredible voice. Hmm. But in addition to that, she has to let you into the internal life of the character through her reactions to everything that's going on around her. You have to really get a sense of who this person is. And I think she's fantastic. I think it's funny because both Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth are very, very big shoes to fill. Mm. These are two people with astounding voices who are both really funny and really good actors. And I think Ariana Grande certainly had a big character to fill in, because it's really hard to make an incredibly privileged, arrogant, insensitive, self-involved person a really likable character. Yeah. And she manages to pull it off, and she pulls it off in a different way than Kristen Chenoweth does in the original. So I think she's great. I don't know what you're talking about with Jonathan Bailey.
I'm an island on this one. I know.
Yeah, I loved him. And I think his big song, Dancing Through Life, and the way, which obviously I guess you don't like.
No, I do not.
Because to me, what it was the greatest, I'm going to say this in a weird way, but it was the greatest bisexual song I have ever seen ever. Because what they were doing, or it seemed to me, was like they were going, this is the most attractive guy, and he is flirting with everybody, male, female, young, old, and all of them are into him. Every single person is into him in this song. And it's this weird thing, which you and I have experienced with people we know, maybe even members of the Geek Buddies, where there are certain people that walk into rooms and everyone wants to hang around that person. Yeah. And that is a sort of fascinating thing to witness, particularly when you are not one of those people, you know? And so that's a lot of the thing that's going on with Elphaba in that relationship, and watching this hugely charismatic, or these multiple hugely charismatic people walk through the world and dance through life, and what it's like to not be one of those people. So I like those three, I think, are all great.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on Cynthia Erivo. You know, there were so many people who were coming out of that theater, and critics as well, who are just falling all over themselves to praise Ariana Grande, which, of course, she deserves her praise. I thought she was incredible and certainly blew me away with what she was able to do, because I was one of those people that was aware of her beginnings, I think, on Nickelodeon. I like her pop music, of course. I enjoy some of the songs that she has. So I knew of her in that way, but I also wasn't too impressed with some of the performances that I'd seen from her, and didn't know if she could make the jump, but clearly she could. But in all the rush to praise her, people seem to be forgetting how great Cynthia Erivo was in the movie. And I made a point of it to stress it consistently on any of the shows I was on, whether it be my shows or other shows, to make sure that people took a moment to appreciate what Cynthia Erivo did, because she is the foundation of the movie. Everyone else can be these weird, flirty, out there type of characters. She has to maintain a strength and a foundational power in the film. And throughout it, she is, and she has to convey a journey, an arc that Elphaba is going through. And I was so caught up in what Cynthia was doing. And again, I went in wondering if maybe she was too old for the role, but she did a great job of younging herself down in terms of her performance when she needed to. And then as the film went on, watching her grow in power, grow in her voice, and then confront the what happens at the end there with the wizard, with Jeffrey Goldblum, and then embrace it with such, I don't know, just such overwhelming strength by the end that when she's delivering Defying Gravity, you are just knocked on your ass. And I found myself, both times seeing the film, I found myself incredibly emotional, hearing the pain in her voice as she's singing this, and the desire to break from everything, to once, for once, finally stand out on her own and not be subjected to anybody else's comments about her skin color, about her not being her sister, and about her life. And I loved that. So, but you make a great point. Ariana had a very tough time with a role like this. It's a high wire act to make someone this aloof and this caught up in their privilege to make them likable. And I think she did that by the end, certainly throughout the movie, actually. And by the end, I was very much like in her camp, so that when the break happens between the two of them, I was like upset at her for that, which makes it effective what she did. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just, you know what? There are just some actors that don't connect to you. I don't feel a connection with Jonathan Bailey. Just, I was kind of bored through that dancing. I didn't think that was that great of a song. It was very well directed, which we'll get to, and choreographed. But I just, yeah, he's kind of a, I don't know, he's a little milquetoast for me. So it doesn't work for me overall. I love the Peter Dinklage stuff, especially when he's talking about what they're going through as the animals and what you're learning. There was so much emotion in his voiceover work there that I thought was great. Bowen Yang was a lot of fun in this. And Michelle Yeoh, I think at times Michelle Yeoh is slightly miscast in certain moments, and in other moments she nails it. So it's not 100% of a great performance from her, but Jeff Goldblum was exceptional in the movie when he gets a chance to have those scenes near the end. So a lot of strong acting overall here from the film that makes you buy into the world and takes you along on their emotional journeys. Go ahead.
I think Goldblum, I mean, he's Goldbluming it up in a way that totally, totally works, in particular because, you know, spoiler alert for this, you know, 30-year-old musical or whatever, you know, he's not what he appears to be.
And you know, centuries old story.
And it's, yeah, exactly. Well, except in the who the wizard is in this version is very different from who the wizard is in The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz is a con man, definitely, but he's not evil. You know, whereas this Wizard of Oz is evil. Like, that's, you know, in the end, you're going to realize that he is behind all of the terrible things. And this is one of the things I think the movie does better than the play. The play's trying to do a lot of heavy lifting and nailing sort of this, what is the world in terms of the animals, the speaking animals who are being oppressed, and slowly their voices are being taken away. I mean, the metaphor is not it's not hidden about what we're talking about.
It's colonizing. It's colonizing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's any time that you take a group and say a group is lesser than and therefore should not be contributing, you know?
Well, you take their land to take their, that's what the wizard does. He takes the position there and essentially eliminates the animals that were there before the human showed up. So that's the colonization aspect of it all,
yeah, and so I think it's much the turn as you start to realize, because like Elphaba, you're going, the wizard is the great person who's going to do all the great things, and your feelings about the Michelle Yeoh character and all of that is like slowly breaking down as you go, oh, the world is not what I perceived it to be. It's very much has a similarity to Harry Potter in the sense that the world that Harry Potter shows up in, it's a very much a kid's book. And it's like, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys and everything is simple. And then as the books go on, you go, oh, there's evil in a lot of places I didn't expect it. And things, people that I thought I can trust, maybe I can't trust. And the world is more complicated and more difficult. And I think they do a really good job with that. And Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Yeoh at the heart of it. Because when you get to the turn and you go, oh, shit, this isn't what I thought. Because it isn't just that Elphaba says, hey, I'm going to be myself and I don't, you know, and it's not, I hate being judged by my color and all those things are totally true in terms of her internal journey. Yeah. But it's also her as the hero going, I cannot stand idly by, which apparently Glinda maybe can, and watch terrible things happen in the world that I have to stand up and fight against it, which is great. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, and listen, this is the Cinephile, so we're going to go deeper sometimes and people should not be, I hope people are not offended by this, but it's very clear, right, that all these people are invested in what this leader wants them to buy into. And Glinda herself is not willing to walk away from this situation here because she is too invested in it. And whereas Elphaba, who has always been the victim of the world because of the way the world treated her from the beginning, including her father, she pushes back on it. She's the one that has the strength to fight through it because she doesn't have the same connection, even though she believed in the wizard. Once the wizard, once she realized the truth about the wizard, it was the final break that she needed to break away from it and have her strength to fight back. So you make excellent points. I will push back on the wizard thing a little bit, though, because we're catching wizard when he's young, right? That the wizard that we see in Wizard of Oz is an old wizard. It's a completely different wizard, just like Odin. Odin did all that shit with Hela, and then he's a soft, cuddly guy now at the end here in Thor. But when he was with Hela, he was certainly a brutal guy, killing multiple people. So maybe this is a wizard, as we see him in The Wizard of Oz, who's much older and he's softer. And so we kind of gloss away some of the stuff that Jeff Goldblum did. But he might have started out a little more mean or evil than we know about. But I haven't read the books, though, so I don't know fully what the interpretation of it is. But let's move on to John M. Chu's direction, Steve. What are your thoughts here as a director watching what he was able to do here with this musical, not only the numbers themselves, but the non-singing parts as well, when he's taken us through these emotional journeys with the construction of Shia's university, the towns and the villages and the opulent look of certain things, but also the journey that these characters go on as their friendship builds throughout the film.
The first thing, just in terms of production design and world building, is I think he really does a great job of making you feel the original Wizard of Oz, like having some sense, some design reference to that world.
Yeah.
And then transforming it and building it out into this much more rich and complex world. I think so. Everything from costume design and production design to the props, the makeup, the hair, I think all of it is done really, really well. Yeah. Beautifully designed. We know the guy can do choreography. Obviously, he's done that many times, but I think there's some great particular choreography, particularly Dancing Through Life, I think is great. And I also think he really stays focused, and this is so key in a musical, on the actual characters and what are their characters' struggles. There's never a moment where I didn't understand what Elphaba was going through or what Glinda's perspective on everything was and how the world was treating them. I was very, very clear on all the storytelling, which is like one of the most important things for a director. I do think, and you guys talked about it on the Geek Buddies, there are times where he cuts out of songs to other things in ways that, you know, and in particular in Defying Gravity, it's like there is a rhythm that is weird at the very end that I didn't like. Although, Cynthia Erivo's version of that song is astounding. So the song is great. So there's little things, but those are kind of nitpicky things. I think in general, I think he does a beautiful job.
Yeah.
John, did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? I mean, it's not just about your birthday. Your body could be a little bit older, could be a little bit younger than what you think. And that's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part, it's all done from the comfort of your home. No prescriptions, no lab visits. It's just a simple test sent right to your door.
Yeah, Steve, that's why I was so excited when True Diagnostic said they wanted to come on and sponsor us here on The Cinephiles. You know, you and me both talk about our health, and certainly people listening to us, they're very aware of their health as they get a little bit older, and you want to kind of stop things from coming or be more aware of what might be coming. And True Diagnostic has a thing called True Age Test. And in that True Age Test, you can find out so much about the age of your body, which helps you. So I was very excited when I got my True Age Test recently from True Diagnostic.
And the cool part is, this is not guesswork. The True Age Test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working at Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I mean, this is real science that you can trust. So think about what it would be like to know exactly how your lifestyle is impacting your body. True Diagnostic makes it easy to get started, offering simple, actionable insights that you can use right away. This is your chance to take control of your health and get the bigger picture. Don't leave it to chance. True Diagnostic helps you understand not just where you're at now, but where you're headed.
All great points, Steve. All right, Cinephiles fans, are you ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at TrueDiagnostic.com by using the code CINEPHILES at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic, TrueDiagnostic.com. Just use the code CINEPHILES to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. I thought The Wizard and I is the Defying Gravity is the number one thing to watch this musical for in terms of a number. But I thought The Wizard and I was incredible. That was when she sings that. That's the moment that I'm like, oh, I'm in on this. I'm actually invested in this, and I found myself going along with it. And I think John M. Chu does a wonderful job, which is why it's a crime that he wasn't nominated for Best Director, because a 2-hour and 40-minute musical that makes almost $800 million and counting is an incredible accomplishment. And to deliver a film that is nominated for Best Picture with two of the two main leads being nominated for Oscars, I think speaks volumes about the quality of the movie and what he was able to do as a director in bringing this thing home, and the immensity of the task, Steve. I mean, it's just a massive thing to, first of all, to split it into two parts, and then to transfer it from Broadway onto the screen to make it work. And as you said so well, allude to the original Wizard of Oz for those of us who have maybe not seen the musical, but know the Wizard of Oz, so we feel a sense of comfort here, and to introduce us to the world for the first time for those of us who haven't seen it, and for the ones who have seen the musical before, do it in a way that's new and exciting for that medium of film. So I think he did an incredible job in staging the numbers and taking us through. I do agree at times in a couple of the numbers, the switching back and forth throws off the rhythm. So you're wondering what the editing on that was and what the idea behind all of that was. But overall, his direction is just phenomenal. And again, I reiterate, a crime that it was not nominated. And as you pointed out, we should give a lot of love to the production design from Nathan Crowley. The cinematography here from Alice Brooks is exceptional as well. What do you think about the music here from John Powell, carrying on some of the stuff that Stephen Schwartz did in the musical on Broadway?
Well, first of all, the Stephen Schwartz songs are, there are a lot of bangers in that musical.
Yes, I mean,
the second time I see it, we took Jackson to see it. And then we were driving from New York up to Connecticut, and we literally played Popular and what's the song? I Loathe It All, whatever that one's, I forget the title of that song, played it over and over and over again. So many good songs. They're just really, really great. The Wizard and I, if you've mentioned, obviously Defying Gravity, these are great songs. And I think it's a weird job to have to build a score on a musical, because it means using the themes and the ideas and the style so that it all feels like you're of a piece. And I honestly never thought about it, which means that they did a really, really good job.
Yeah, I think so too. I the element of the songs themselves, fantastic, but I thought the score itself, bringing you into what's going on, underlying the emotion very strongly so that you're swept up in the film, I thought worked really, really well as well. So there's just so much. Now, what about the story? Now, you've seen the musical. There were some changes made from stage to screen here. So are there any of the changes that stood out to you, any of the changes that you noticed that worked or didn't work for you as you were watching this movie?
Well, two things. One is, I should say, I also did read the book that this is based on, and I hated it. I really didn't like this book. You know me, I tend to be a completionist, and so like there's more in the series, and it is one of the few series that I did not go on to read the next book because I just didn't really like it. So I think, A, the adaptation from the book to the musical, they tightened it up. They made the characters much more likable, much more relatable. But I think what happens going from the musical to the movie is they filled it out. That they took more time, obviously, because you're taking one show and splitting it into two long movies. Mm-hmm. But they really filled out, in particular, the development of Elphaba's character, her recognition of the things that are going on in the world. And there's just a lot more little details that you see, particularly like with Elphaba's sister and the, I forget the name of the other character, the young guy who's dating her, and what that relationship is.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to see what happens with that in part two. But I think they really did a much better job filling all that stuff out.
Yeah, a lot of people are worried about what's going to happen to Nessa. Like, does the house fall on a woman in wheelchair? What is the story there? So there's curiosity abound going into the next part of this. Are there any negatives about the movie, Steve, that you felt you could talk about, but that you haven't already mentioned here as we've been talking about the separate sections or the separate creative work here on the film?
I don't have big negatives. There wasn't, like I said, I mean, if you watch a 2-hour and 40-minute movie and I was never looking at my watch, right there is a real sign of accomplishment. So no, I didn't have any big negatives. I think Bowen Yang is hilarious. I really do. I think there was maybe 15% too many snarky cutbacks to him to make a little comment as we go along. It's not that they weren't funny. They were funny. Yeah. There were just like a little bit too much of them. That's my feeling.
I have to say, I don't disagree with you. I think we got the point is what I felt at certain moments. Like, I get it. And because it kind of didn't, it turned them into caricatures rather than more fleshed out
right.
characters within the movie. And I think you, I don't think that was the wisest choice, because the whole film does a really good job of establishing almost everyone's character. I will say the dad is a bit more unknowable, so I don't know if there's more to come from him in the second part. I've heard that there might be more that they're fleshing out and alluding to, which is why they kept him kind of mysterious in the first part. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I would agree with that. I think there was just a bit too much on that end. I do find the middle a little bit gets wonky, you know, right before they get to the train, the whole right. like right when he comes in, it just feels a little not as cohesive as I would like it to be. And that's the only kind of part in the movie where I feel like, okay, I'm you know, they've done enough to keep me in this place and have me holding on. And I do think the friendship happens too quickly. Like there, I think there needs to be a couple more scenes of Elphaba slowly figuring out that there is something happening here, that she is aware that Galinda is wanting to connect a little bit more, and that Elphaba is more resistant to it as Galinda is more aggressively wanting to do it. But they do that in the song, but I would have liked to have seen scenes that weren't sung, where we see both sides very firmly entrenched in their positions and then slowly realizing that maybe this isn't the best position to take with that opposite person. But other than that, yeah, I think it's a fantastic movie and very enjoyable and holds up to multiple rewatches and clearly capture the pop culture zeitgeist. Maybe not as strongly as Barbie did, but certainly it's up there with some of the most recent pop culture films that everyone was talking about afterwards. And a lot of people felt this one might crash and burn, and it is blown up like crazy.
You know what's interesting is your comments. I think they're spot on, first of all, in terms of the development of the friendship and the sort of that there is a bit of a lull before heading off to Emerald City. And those are classically, in my experience, and most of the writers I talk about, frequently the hardest part of your screenplay to write is the end of Act 2 heading into Act 3. That is where things get really hard, because you've dealt with the initial conflicts that you were setting up. Yeah. And now but you haven't dropped the big new conflict that's going to take us into Act 3. Right. And so now you're in sort of but you have stuff to establish and story things and exposition to get out. And so that is almost always where it gets really, really hard to write. And I think that's exactly what's going on there, is that we've mostly resolved the main conflict is Elphaba versus Galinda.
Yeah.
And then we've mostly resolved that. But we haven't gone into what's going to happen with the wizard and all that stuff yet. And so there's sort of a rough area to get through. And I think you're totally spot on with that.
Yeah. I call all these acts waves, right? Like to me, the second act into the third act undertow before the wave comes back. That's or the pulling back of the water before the waves come back. That's where it feels a little bit like there's some wonkiness. So, all right. Any final words here, Steve, as we wrap up our conversation? Anything else we missed or you want to make sure we highlight here throughout this conversation about the movie before we wrap it up?
My only final word is if they nail part two, which is, I think the degree of difficulty is way harder knowing what happens in act two. There's a lot, if they can nail it and solve, in my opinion, some of the problems that are in the stage musical, this is going to be a perennial favorite. Like this is going to be something that people watch all the time. If they nail part two,
You know, already it's broken records for VOD. As soon as it came out on VOD, it like hit the stratosphere. So I think this is one that's going to endure, even if part two isn't great. But I hear you. If part two is great, it's going to make it even more of a massive a success. And I'm sure John M. Chu will probably be nominated that time around. And possibly win for best director if they nail part two. And he's already said that he's made changes, and the success of part one has affected how they approach editing part two, but he is making this much more for the fans. So I'm curious to see what that cut means or what that means in the cut when we watch, when we get to see part two. So we'll see very soon for sure. As for me, final notes is this. This is for a guy who had no knowledge much about the musical beyond Defying Gravity and Popular, which my geek buddies played ad nauseum for me for years. Going into this one, I didn't expect to like it. Not that I was cheering against it. I just didn't expect to like it. And I found myself absolutely brought into the world so effectively. And I loved where it took me. I loved the emotion it got out of me. And by the end, I loved that I enjoyed these actors playing these roles and delivering such wonderful performances that took me on such incredible emotional journey. So one of the best things that have come out last year, and no surprise I got nominated for Best Musical. What do you anticipate, though, as we wrap up, Steve? What do you think it will win in terms of the Oscars that it has been nominated for? Do you think with all the controversy over Emilia Perez that maybe Cynthia Erivo might slide in here and take this over Demi Moore? Or do you think... do you think that the Zoe Saldana might be in trouble here now because of the Emilia Perez situation, and Ariana Grande could slide in and take the Oscar here? Because it's nominated for 10 Oscars. So do you think that's a possibility for it?
I think it has been well established that when it comes to predicting the future and making Oscar picks, I suck. So... But I will happily give you my sense of things.
Okay,
great. Which is, I think Zoe Saldana is fantastic in Emilia Perez, but I think that Ariana Grande definitely has a lead to win because, you know, to coin the phrase, she is an incredibly popular character.
Hey.
Like, they're, you know, and so as far as, I think, I really don't have a sense of what I think should win or will win Best Picture. Mm. I have my feelings about these movies, but it's, you know, and because of the controversy over Emilia Perez, I think that's makes everything more complicated. I mean, frankly, that wouldn't be my pick for Best Picture anyway, even though I like the film.
I agree.
I think in terms of production design, there's a real good chance for this one. I think score has a real good chance. I don't tend to think Best Picture, but you know what? It's a hugely popular picture that a lot of people love. It's extremely well made. If it did win Best Picture, I'd be okay with that. What's your feeling?
Yeah, I think it is between Erivo and Demi Moore now. I do think Demi Moore still has the upper hand, and certainly we'll talk about the substance in this series as well. I think Ariana Grande now has a much more legitimate chance to take this from Zoe than she may have had a couple of weeks ago. And so... I thought Zoe was pretty much a lock, but you never know with the Oscars. And Steve and I know this. You never know with Best Supporting Actress. It's one of those unknown, unpredictable categories that you never know who's going to come out of that thing and win it. I don't think it will win Best Picture. I think it's very clear that it's going to be Anora or The Brutalist who will win possibly between those two. Costume design, I think, absolutely has a great chance for costume design. Makeup and hairstyling for sure, production design as well, and possibly even original score, although I think The Brutalist has a great score. So to me, that's Conclave, which we just talked about. I think that those two scores are, I would take those scores over this score, but you never know. And sound and visual effects, I don't think it'll win sound and visual effects. I think that's Dune territory.
Yeah.
But for sure, there's at least two or three that I think it has a really good shot of getting when all is said and done at the Oscars. And we'll see what it gets on our awards, Steve, which, of course, we should make sure we highlight. March 1st is when we're doing our own Cinephiles Awards show based on the Oscar nominations there that we've gotten. So look for that. And if you haven't participated yet, I think, Steve, what can we tell them? Is the voting or is the document out there for people to vote?
It is. The voting is underway, so you still have a chance to vote by going to patreon.com/thecinephiles. Won't cost you any money. All you have to do is join the free tier. Of course, you're welcome to join more expensive tiers as well to get things like ad-free versions of the show, join our Cinephiles advisory board, or listen to our Cinephiles shorts. But at the free tier, you can sign up. You'll have access to the ballot, and you can put in your votes for who you want to win the Cinephiles Awards. And we even have a write-in category. So if your favorite performance or film or score got left out, you can add them in and we will give, they might win the award there.
Yeah, there you go. All right. For my partner, Steve Morris, I am John Rocha. This has been our conversation on Wicked for the Oscars Best Picture series here on the Cinephiles. We'll talk to you soon with another episode just like this down the road. Take care.